The real question is that a security? Because there's no law on syndications. You just do it. But the minute it becomes a security, then you step over to the SEC and you have to do it according to the SEC's rules.
This is the naked truth about real estate investing. Your host, Javier, has already been through all the brain damage of this business, so you don't have to go through it. That way, you're not exposed to all of the risk of losing your shirt or getting caught with your pants down. So let's dive into another No BS episode right now.
Hello, everybody. I am Javier Hinojo, your host of The Naked Truth About Real Estate Investing. And today I have Gene Throwbridge on the show. He is a SEC attorney, securities attorney. He helps with raising capital, PPMs, and he's got a YouTube channel. He's got a book I mentioned at the end, right? It's called It's a Whole New Business. It's an Amazon Audible as well. He has been a commercial real estate broker. He's been a syndicator for 20 years, and he became an attorney, well, I don't want to say later in life, but you know, a few years after doing 20 years of syndication, right? So most people become an attorney in their early 20s. He did it in his 40s, right? So it's like me going to college right now and becoming an attorney, right? That's just crazy to me. But Gene did it. Thank you so much, Gene, for being on the show.
Thanks for having me. Yes, as you said, my whole career has been commercial real estate. Coming out of college, I was a commercial real estate broker. And then I decided to be a syndicator. And I spent 20 years really building storage facilities here in Southern California. And then when I was, 1995, I decided that I would end that and I'd go to law school. So I was 45 years old when I went to law school, and I thought I'd be a lawyer for 15 years and retire. And it's been 30 years so far.
Look at that.
No retiring. I have a hashtag, not retiring.
Not retiring. All right. That is awesome. That is super cool. All right. So kind of walk me through. You went, you were a broker, residential, commercial.
Commercial.
Commercial. Okay. In California. You've been in California? Yep.
Well, actually, Minnesota. Then we moved to California when I started my syndication business.
All right. So you moved from Canada to California. That's great. Yeah. Pretty, you know, Minnesota. I think Minnesota, I think Canada. So hopefully
up there. Yeah.
All right. So you moved from Minnesota. You moved to California. After you were a broker, you started your syndication. So my next question was going to be, what kind of syndication? And you just told me that you were doing storage facilities.
We built self-storage, right? Not to hold and operate, but to build and then sell off to full-time, long-term operators.
Okay. So like possibly like a fund or just other syndicators, other investors?
Well, we do two. We always did two properties in every one of our offerings. And then we would sell the properties individually for a long. We sold half of our properties to Public Storage.
Okay.
Had a good relationship there when they weren't building. And I owned a lot of orange paint. And so we painted roofs and doors and everything orange. And we sold a lot of them to Public Storage as an example of the long-term operators that would buy our properties.
Oh, interesting. So you built that, broker did that. And then what made you go to law school?
Well, I was doing pretty well as a syndicator. The last full year, we sent out over 1,800 K-1s and had 850 investors. And in those days, there were no back office apps to help you manage that. It was all done in-house. And I was raising money through the broker-dealer community, through securities brokers. And they came to me and they wanted me to double the size of my offerings. They wanted to raise more money from me in every deal. And I didn't want to do that.
Okay.
I didn't want to take that risk. So I went home and, you know, I'll say this, Javier, every great decision is made at the kitchen table. So I went home at lunch and talked to my wife and said, you know, I think I've had enough of this. I've got some good revenue coming for the next 6, 7, 8 years. I think I'll go to law school. And I did.
Oh, great. So where did you go to law school?
Well, it was called Western State University in Southern California in Orange County. And right. Passed the California bar the first time. And all I was ever going to do was be a California, well, anyhow, a syndication attorney, which happens to be federal law. So it doesn't make any difference where I'm authorized. But I am a member of the California bar. And our firm works all over the country. It's, like I said, it's federal law. We do offerings in almost every state for sponsors in almost every state. It doesn't make any difference where the property or the sponsor is.
Perfect. So that was going to be my next question, right? So now that you got your law degree, started your firm, what is your main focus, right? It's just helping syndicate?
Nothing but real estate syndication.
Okay.
We only do real estate syndication from day one.
So would a crowdfund be considered a syndication?
Sure. Sure. Okay. A syndication is anytime two or more people pool their money. Crowdfunding is one of the words that are used to talk about a securities offering in a syndication. Crowdfunding and then, of course, Regulation D, securities offerings, those are the two words that you hear a lot about. So my whole business is representing clients who want to raise money from multiple investors and go out and do some real estate.
So my next question is, when somebody talks about, hey, I need to do a syndication, right? They say, okay, that's basically somebody buying a commercial property and getting 10 folks to invest in their syndication, right? Invest in their property.
Right. That is a syndication. The real question is that a security?
Okay.
Because there's no law on syndications. You just do it. But the minute it becomes a security, then you step over to the SEC and you have to do it according to the SEC's rules.
And when does it become a security?
Well, simply when the investors invest their money and everyone invests together in one enterprise to buy one building, and they're doing it because they think they can make a profit. But Javier is running it. Javier is making it happen. So the words are an investment of money in a common enterprise with an expectation of profit through the efforts of a promoter or a sponsor. The minute the promoter or the sponsor gets involved, then we have people's money being managed by other people. And that's when the government wants to be involved. And the basis between in the securities laws is, did you disclose everything before your investors invested with you? Did you give them all the information they needed to make an informed decision before they invested? That's why you write a PPM and you write all the documents. And then the other securities law is, if you're selling securities for other people, not you, you need a securities license, just like selling real estate. I can sell my own real estate under for sale by owner, but I can't sell your real estate, okay? Because you own it and I don't. So in the securities world, if I put together a syndication and go out and sell it myself, I can do that without a securities license, but I can't sell yours.
Yeah, interesting. Yes, that's very well, explained that very well, Gene. Appreciate that. So I see a lot of people on social media, hey, I got this property under contract and I need $1 million, right?
Yeah.
And I look
most
at that,
of that is wrong.
Yes. I see that and I'm like, oh my gosh, you know.
Most of that is wrong. There are a number of things that people are doing that are wrong. I think first of all, it's some ignorance that real estate brokers think they can just take 10 people together, buy a piece of real estate, and that's fine. It's real estate. I do real estate. I'm licensed to do real estate, but they don't understand that it's a security, and now we're in the securities world. So that's a mistake. However, there are two ways you can raise money in the securities world. One, Javier, is when you raise money from people with whom you have a pre-existing relationship, people you know. Okay, that's fine. And then the other one is, can you go out and advertise? Can you put on social media your offering? And can people that you don't know, you know, send you a $25,000 check? Well, that's advertising. And there are two separate rules. Most of the money is raised when people don't advertise, when they're doing investments with investors with whom they have a pre-existing relationship. They know them. And a minority of the offerings are where you can advertise. So when you see, the reason I'm saying that, when you see something on social media, you don't know if it's right or wrong. Sometimes a wise sponsor will put on their social media posting that this is a Regulation D Rule 506 offering, only available to accredited investors. Well, that's the rule on when you advertise. And so then using your social media and advertising is fine. But when you just see someone, I'm going to raise $1 million, and they don't tell you what they're doing, you really don't know if it's right or wrong. But a lot of people do it wrong. And, you know, the SEC has a lot of people to police, a lot of people to look at. So even though the securities laws are criminal laws, not too many people go to jail over this. I mean, an example would have been Mr. Madoff. He went to jail because he stole money like crazy, a Ponzi scheme. And you'd be surprised, every year there's 5 or 6 large Ponzi schemes going on in the private placement market where people will raise $10, $12, $20 million and tell the investors this is what they're going to do. They're going to build assisted living houses. And they don't spend any of the money that way. So the states have plenty to do to police those big guys, not so much with the little investors. So you find generally what the SEC would say to me if I had something posted and it was not a 506C, they would issue a cease and desist order to me, which makes me take down all my social media posting and stop raising money that way.
Yep. Yeah, I know somebody got that, got a little slap on the hand and said, hey, can I post anymore? They just, you know, it wasn't super big, but they just, you know, they regulated.
No, and you know, it's pretty easy for the SEC and the staff to sit at their computer and Google, you know, preferred returns, outstanding investment, and see who's out there posting it. So it's easy for them to figure it out.
Yep. So I know a lot of people don't understand, and you explained now the 506 B and the 506C, right? 506B is friends and family, people you have an existing relationship, and 506C, you can pretty much put it on a billboard.
Right, absolutely.
And but what is considered a pre-existing relationship?
Well, let's put it this way. You don't necessarily have to have a pre-existing relationship. But if the deal goes wrong and an investor comes to you and says, you know, I didn't know you.
Yeah.
You advertised and got me involved. You better have some proof that you did have a pre-existing relationship. So what evidence do you have that that person's in your database? What evidence do you have that you have discussed and gotten to know? Because really, pre-existing and substantive, you're supposed to know if the investor's accredited, not accredited, what's their investment experience, what risk can they handle, what's their education. So you need to know something about the investor, and that's your defense. If you can't say that, well, I just, you know, someone came to me and I took their money. Well, then they're going to say you advertise and your offering is, you blow your exemption. Let me give you figures. The last 12 months that the SEC came out with their report, there was a little over $2 trillion raised in private placements.
$2 trillion?
$2 trillion, more than all the money on Wall Street raised in IPOs that year. This is huge business. Now, it's certainly not all real estate. Maybe it's 25 or 30% real estate, but it's all sorts of businesses. Anyone who wants to raise money, I mean, Google raises money in private placements. Tesla raises money in private placements. Big companies raise money in private placements. And most of it is raised through the securities brokers network. And they all have pre-existing relations with their investors. They don't have to advertise at all. But 95% of the money is raised through offerings where there are pre-existing relationships. And only 5% is raised just by advertising. Think about it. You're going to put a social media post on there and you're going to ask me to send you $50,000 and I don't know who you are. How successful are we going to be?
That's true. Well, I've seen somebody start with a 506B and then they raise some money and then they turn it into a 506C.
Yeah, you can do that. That's really inside of the same documents. It becomes two offerings. You tell the SEC, you file a Form D to tell the SEC what you're doing, and you start with a 506B. And then when you're through with that, you file a new Form D and tell them, okay, I'm going forward. And from now on, it's 506C. It's not terribly common. And once again, you have a marketing question. Who's going to send you money that doesn't know you?
For sure.
So you better not even try a 506C unless you have a track record.
Oh, yeah,
that's what I think.
Well, I just subscribed to your YouTube channel, Trowbridge Law, right? And then your website as well. I just logged in there and I'm checking out the website. So everybody feel free to, it'll be on the show notes as well, as far as the website, trowbridgelawgroup.com and Trowbridge Law. It's a YouTube channel. So you got a lot of cool videos, 4 questions you should ask your lender. Just you got a lot of cool stuff about crowdfunding.
A lot of stuff, a lot of stuff.
Which is great because you can get a lot of just basic legal knowledge of what you're offering, right? Especially if you're going to go offer, if you're going to go raise money, at least kind of know what you're talking about, right?
So that's let's do it right so we don't get in trouble. And in my whole career, I don't know if you know what the CCIM program is, but I taught CCIM classes for 40 years, commercial real estate for the CCIM Institute. I've done a lot of stuff, and my whole world, Javier, is education-based marketing. Okay. So yes, I'm educating all the time, but I hope if you watch my education and you decide this is something you want to do, you contact me. That's my world.
For sure. So you said you provide services, doesn't matter what part of the country, since it's kind of, it's
doesn't BPA, matter at all. Federal law.
That's great. That's awesome. So I'm going to ask you another question. So if somebody says, hey, I'm going to buy a property and instead of saying, hey, I'm looking to raise money, they say, I'm looking for a joint venture partner, right? So is that kind of threading the line or is that
okay? No, you can have a joint venture. There isn't really such a thing as a legal entity called a joint venture. It would generally be, two LLCs or two general partners coming together in kind of a joint venture format. You don't take title as a joint venture. You take title as whatever your entities are. And that's fine. You can do a joint venture. The question is, does the joint venture get structured so that it's a security? You and I could put in 50% of the money equally, but I'm going to make all the decisions. You could call that a joint venture, but that's a security. Because once again, here's someone in charge of someone else's money. And when there's a promoter in charge of a passive, if you want to use that term, a passive investor's money, the federal government has an interest in making sure that that passive investor is protected. And how are they protected? The sponsor follows the securities law.
Interesting. So even if you have two partners and one is just placing money and the other one is the manager.
Yeah, that's an investment of money in a common enterprise with an expectation of profit through the results of the promoter. That's a security.
Interesting. Awesome. Cool. Well, that's something that I see quite a bit and definitely.
Well, you know why people do that? They do that because they want to stay out of the securities law.
Sure.
They just say, well, if I do a joint venture, and there are gurus out there who teach you joint ventures aren't securities. And I paid attention to their education and that they're not always following what I think. I'm not going to say that they're wrong. I'm going to say they're not following what I think.
Oh, interesting. All right, Gene. Well, I appreciate you being on the show. Thank you so much. You definitely gave us some good tips. And I'm going to ask you a question. What's the biggest mistake you see, I guess you can call syndicators make when going out there raising money, right? As far as securities law and all that.
Other than advertising when they're not supposed to, and we've already talked about that, the biggest mistake is finding someone else to help you raise money. Let's say I was raising money and I was short and I needed $1 million and I came to you and said, will you raise $1 million for me? I'll pay you 5% of what you raise. Well, that's illegal. First of all, you don't have a securities license, so you can't. Secondly, the rule is that there's no transaction-based compensation unless you're a securities broker. So unless you're a securities broker, you're violating the law, and so am I. So that's very, very, very important. And I think today, one of the things we have to worry about is the lending environment. I think it takes longer to get a loan today than it did, a year ago. So when a 45-day escrow was fine, 60 or 75 might be better today. Those would be the major decisions.
Oh, perfect. All right. Well, thank you so much, Gene, for that. And I wish I had you for an hour, because I know we can probably give me a lot of stories and a lot more.
Well, I can come back.
Oh, for sure.
Remember, the hashtag is not retiring. So I'll come back if you want.
That is awesome.
I'd love to.
Definitely. There's something I got for you. It's a little bit of a surprise. I call it the Naked Truth Roulette. And nobody has to get naked here, but it's just called the Naked Truth Roulette. And it's a random roulette that's going to ask you some random questions.
Fine.
All right. So I'm going to share my screen, and you let me know when you see my screen.
I see your screen.
All right. So here we go. I'm going to ask you first question, random question. Got nothing to do with real estate, okay? Nothing to do with real estate.
This is cool. This is cool. All right, go.
All right, here we go. Let's see. First question for Gene is, what is your favorite food?
My favorite food is Italian food with a very close second to Mexican food. Right, so very, very close.
If you were to say your favorite Italian dish, what would it be?
It would be a pasta. My wife and I just celebrated our 50th wedding anniversary and went to Italy. And in Italy, I tried a pasta that I had seen on television, which was just really a special type of cheese, melted, a special type of pasta, and cracked ground pepper. That's all it was.
Capri? Was it Capri? Something like that?
Well, it was, I don't know what the name of it was, but, you know, we were watching the show of whoever the Italian guy is who traveled around Italy, and he was talking about food, and I saw this food, and in Rome I ordered it, and it was just great. But I like sausage and spaghetti tied up together. That's fun.
Awesome. So Gene, I'm gonna celebrate my 25th year anniversary, so I'm halfway to your 50, so I'll be there soon.
Wonderful. Good for you.
In a few months, but this summer I took my family on, we went on 28 days vacation to Europe, my 17-year-old and my 11-year-old, and we were in Rome as well. We were in Rome for about 6-7 days. And one of my daughter's friends was an exchange student here in North Carolina and lives in Rome, which is great. We got connect with their family, and they took us to eat. They called it authentic Roman food. I'm like, isn't it that Italian? But anyways, and we show up to this restaurant.
I don't think it is. It's different.
And they gave us this pasta, like the thin noodles with it's a little bit of white pasta, not very saucy, but it had a lot of pepper on it, like black pepper. It had a little kick to it.
That could have been the same thing. That's exactly. And that's only in Rome.
Yes.
I tried to get that in Florence and Tuscany, and they don't do it.
Yes. It tastes different. But it was just had a little bit of kick. It wasn't very saucy. Like you see a big old sauce.
No,
it was so good. That was one of my favorite dishes that I had. So I think it was called Capri or something like that. I think.
Okay.
Somebody will correct me at some point, but awesome. All right. So Italian is your favorite. All right. Second question. Let's see what we got here. All right. If you could pick another time to live, either the future or the past, when would it be?
It would have been in the past. I would have liked to have lived through the 40s, 50s, and 60s when the country was growing. That's what I would have liked to have done.
40s, 50s, and 60s. Awesome. Thank you, Gene. All right. Last question for you. Let's roll. Trying to get a tough one here for you, but you know what? I don't control the odds here. It's whatever comes out. Okay, come on. Let's see what we get here. All right, this will be a good one. Your favorite quote?
Oh, I've already given it to you. All the great decisions are made at the kitchen table.
You know what? That is an awesome quote. When I used to do a lot of sales, I used to buy real estate direct to a seller, and I used to go to their house. And I always make sure that we sat in the kitchen table.
Absolutely. My partner, my law partner, Jonathan, just got married on Saturday, and he asked me to officiate, and he asked me to talk about what do I owe the fact that we made it for 50 years. And I said, well, a couple things. Number one, Jimmy Buffett has in a song called He Went to Paris, a line that says some of it's magic and some of it's tragic. And you have to be ready for that. When you say for better or worse, trust me. Trust me. Yep. And then secondly, Bob Dylan has a song in his song. It's called Forever Young. The lyric is, may you have a strong foundation when the winds of change shift. And over 25 years, you know that they have, and you know that they will again. So how did we do it? Well, we started out when we were young, having at least one meal a day at the kitchen table. And we both worked and we both traveled and all that. Then the kids came and we made sure that the kids sat at the kitchen table with us. And today, I'll go home and no kitchen table anymore. It's peninsula, right? Kay and I'll sit at the kitchen table and we'll talk. And we talk so much about stuff that rarely is there a surprise. Okay. We're pretty much ready. I mean, we've talked about, we've adopted our babies, we've had deaths, we've had all sorts of stuff, and we've talked about it. And that's not advice I'm giving to anyone else. I'm just saying that's what worked for me out here.
That's awesome, Gina. I'm really glad to hear that. I hear all the time, hey, marriages fail 50% of the time. I'm like, well, actually, not really. If you focus on the ones that make it, right, just do what they do, and you should have 100% success ratio. You know, you should have 100%.
Yeah, you never know. Well, that's it. Well, thanks for having me.
Gene, thank you so much. And by the way, you have a book. It's called It's a Whole New Business. It's a book on
Amazon. Available at
Amazon.
I think there's some connection to it on my website, to tell you the truth. Today, I don't remember. And then there's an Audible book.
Awesome.
This is a fourth edition. This January, I went in and narrated it. And, you know, you narrate and you say, gee, I'd like to talk about this for a minute. And I think it's pretty compelling.
Awesome, Gene. Thank you so much. Everybody out there, if you need an attorney to help you out with raising capital, do some securities, PPMs, reach out to Gene. Gene, thank you so much for being on the show.
You're welcome. See you again.
Just as promised, I like to give out free stuff, some tools and tips that's actually helped me in my business. There's nothing out there like getting some free stuff that people have spent a lot of time, energy in putting together. It's like a referral. Somebody asked me for an electrician. You don't know what kind of brain damage I had to go through to give you this good referral for an electrician. You got to appreciate referrals from people, okay? Because they went through a lot to find that one good person. So I'm going to give you my due diligence template for buying apartment buildings. It's attached to monday.com. It is an affiliate link, so they're going to send me a kickback. Not a lot, but a little bit. But you can either download it as an Excel or you can put it on monday.com. Monday.com is pretty cool because it's a project management platform software. It's super cool. I use it all the time for my social media, for my team, tracking deals, doing tasks for everybody. It's actually pretty good. You can track construction. It's a project management platform. It's really cool. Monday, like the day, monday.com. So my due diligence checklist is there for free for you.
This has been The Naked Truth. Our mission is to give it to you raw. If you got value from this episode, you're invited to leave an honest written review and share this episode with a friend. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you on the next episode.